I'd like to shift to Jay Gordon. And Jay also was a collaborator with us on our Farm Family Support Network. The Washington Dairy Federation was a sponsor, working with us on that. And so I've had the privilege of working with Jay on and off for the last few years. Not only is he executive director of the Washington State Dairy Federation, which is the legislative watchdog for most of Washington's dairy producers, he also operates a 130-cow dairy near Elma, Washington, that is transitioning to organic production. And I think these two roles provide Jay a really good foundation to talk to us today. So, Jay, we've heard a bit about the dairy industry already. The floor is yours.
Thank you, John. Again, my name is Jay Gordon. I've been the exec for the Dairy Federation here in Warren for just right at 10 years now. Prior to that, I worked with the association as a volunteer and on the board in a number of areas, worked in conservation districts for about 10 years as a volunteer. My wife and I and a bunch of good people that work with me, a partner on my farm that lets me do this job, allow me the opportunity to both do this policy side, but also we have about a 700-acre, and actually we've converted completely to organic over the last dozen years now. Just an opportunity that came up here on the West Coast for a lot of our smaller mid-size dairies. So a couple things. First, wanted to answer a question that came up earlier just to kind of get it out of the way. One of the questions was, you know, where do you turn and where does a producer turn? That's been a challenge for us. And as John mentioned, a number of years ago, the apple industry had started an organization called Family Farm Support Network in Washington. And after 9/11, when we had the dairy prices really drop dramatically, we jumped on board and supported that organization. It gave us an opportunity to put together, I think we had four financial farm counselors that were basically on-call volunteers. They did have some money to help pay for their time when they were out helping the families. I think there was a couple of mental health counseling or health counseling. And for a few short years, we actually had a place to turn. State got into some budget crunches, and we lost the grant funding that had initially started it, and that organization kind of went into deep hibernation and has not been functioning. And it really is one of the things that, for me as an exec, I feel a little shorthanded. In 02, we had a couple, it was actually the farm wives, we had a couple of farm wives that we had gotten word, you know, were making some statements that were a bit concerning as far as suicide, and we were able to get them some help with our dairy women organization. Basically, we just got a couple of tips and called a couple of farm wives that are also nurses and said, you know, I think you need to bake some cookies and get up and talk to your neighbor. But that's, you know, that wasn't good enough. And this Family Farm Support Network did put together, you know, a place where we could call, a place that we could send producers to say, here, they're going to walk through the exercise that you just really heard. You know, what are your options? What are your choices? There is life without farming is one of the options. There is, do you want to stay in farming? Can you stay in farming? And missing that tool has been, for me, just really nerve-wracking this year, because I get up every morning and when I go to bed at night, if nobody's called, said, you know, we've got a suicide, I'm happy, but I'd really rather have a place where we could, like Nebraska, have an opportunity to send producers. And I think it's one of the things in the United States that we're really missing is, I've seen the Nebraska website. I believe there's an Ohio or Iowa also have a group. It's a little unnerving. We have a few banks. Farm Credit has been able to do a little bit of help. We have a couple other banks that specialize in ag lending that are able to help, you know, with some financial analysis in a crisis. But going to your bank with a financial crisis is not usually the first choice for a producer. So I think we're really missing that we're missing the opportunity here that 2,600 farm families using that service in Nebraska just blew me away. So with that, I'm going to focus mostly on dairy, exclusively on dairy. I understand more about dairy by far than anywhere else. This will be West Coast and in particular Northwest, some degree centric, but going to try and talk about kind of where we are and what's happened. And so really starting about a year ago in the dairy industry, we saw dairy prices starting to collapse. We could see the crash coming. The stock market obviously was the first thing that started to bring the world economy down, U.S. economy down. We had had some very good prices. Producers got the signal, turn on the gas, and let's go. The world needs milk. I remember my days in college where some extension or professor patted me on the head and said, "You're a brilliant young man. The world will need food." And for 25 years, we went, "Well, the world needs food, but nobody can pay us for it." And really, I think dairy, obviously the corn and soybeans and, everything just skyrocketed. And it felt like finally American dairy farmers and American farmers were there. The world could pay us for our products. And it was fun to farm for a while. But those high prices led to low prices. New Zealand and Australia came out of their drought. The dollar started to strengthen. So we didn't have the competitive advantage on the world market that we had. The economic crunch really started to hit last winter. In early January last year, the Europeans went back to, on dairy at least, I don't know about the other commodities, but on dairy, the Europeans voted to go back to a fairly high subsidy on their dairy products. They had expanded their quota and allowed their producers to produce some more milk again for that growing world demand. And when the demand started shrinking, they went back to a subsidy program that is legal under WTO, but nevertheless, it makes our products look pretty sad when you get to the retail or the wholesale level, and you're out there knocking on doors in the Asian market or in the other markets for dairy products. And so those combinations really resulted in a very dramatic crash in the prices, and it happened very quick. And anybody that's dairy farming knows that milk check went from looking pretty good in November, December last year to looking really ugly by starting in February and March. And so this next slide really shows that's been our life. It looks a bit like a roller coaster, I think. And you'll notice that this slide doesn't stop with where we are today. We're sitting right in here in late 2009. Shows we're going to get a little bit of an uptick. Today's market shows we're at 1285 on class 3. Next month shows we're at 1439. So hopefully we're actually maybe a little early on this upcycle. This was a price projection that Cornell had done. Basically an update on a model they had done for some policy proposals that counterparts in mine in California had done. And so if you look, it shows that, next spring, according to this model anyway, it looks like we're going to be back into some pretty good prices. So that question that was raised earlier about do I hang on to my equity and get out, or do I see if I can hang on, it has been the question that's plagued really the dairy industry across the United States for the last 4, 5, 6 months is, hey, if I just hang on, it looks like good prices are coming, and I've got enough equity to survive, and while my neighbor might not make it, I will, and I'm committed to being in this industry, and so I'm going to just hang on until I see this wave coming where we've got price increases again. Looks like another 2 years out, we're going to go through the same wonderful downturn. We as dairy producers have an incredible ability to turn on milk. Sex Semen has added a baseline increase on our heifer numbers. We've got excellent producers left in this industry. Anybody that's been in this business understands there's a program called Cooperative Working Together, which is CWT for short, is an industry-funded supply management where the producers, about 70% of the producers across the United States, put a dime per hundredweight into a kitty that, when we have too much milk, it's used to offer producers a chance to sell their cows and send their cows to slaughter. That program has been used, I believe, 7 times, and I think I heard a rumor that yesterday they may have announced another herd buyout. Rumor only. But what that's done is, you know, for farmers, when you have a salesman knock on your door 6 or 7 times and ask, hey, how'd you like to get out of the business? By the 6th or 7th time the salesman comes around and knocks on your door and you've told him no, you're pretty much sure you really want to stay in the industry. And I think that's the other thing that's changed is we have producers that are committed. They've made the decision to stay in this industry. They've had opportunities that are very good opportunities to get out through CWT. And they've said, we want to stay in. We want our kids to have an opportunity. We're going to invest in our infrastructure and in our cows and our dairies, and we're going to be one of the tough ones that survive. And so we have some very, very tough, determined producers left in this industry that want to be in our industry. And so it does tend to make for a bit of a question of how do we constrain growth when we are in a shrinking market like we have for the last, about 12 months now. We're in a world market as well, and I think the ag in uncertain times, I think the challenge and the struggle that we've had in the dairy industry, certainly for the last year, but probably since the post 9/11 crash in the dairy market, is that we're in a world market. And I don't think the United States dairy industry and the United States policies that we have got that date back to the Great Depression are really sufficient tools for dealing with that world market. The slide here is a bit of a hodgepodge. Apologize for it. This is a website that I found cruising around yesterday from New Zealand or from Australia, and I just was struck by how much both it was similar to the complaints by the Australian farmers, but it also had several headlines. They were paying very close attention to our Cooperative Working Together program. How much product is up here in the United States that's weighing down the world market? What is the Europeans going to do? We're doing the same thing. We're looking at what the Europeans are doing. How's Argentina doing? What's Australia doing? Is somebody having a drought somewhere? So this is a world market today that really creates a different bug. When we peaked, I believe, in about June of 2008 on our exports, I believe we were pushing right at 10-11% of all milk produced in the United States was going for the export market. That had traditionally always been in the 4-5% range. And with that world demand, weak dollar, the world said, we'd like to have your milk. And the United States, which has mostly domestic policies for dairy, was suddenly, okay, green light, we'll send the milk to Vietnam or Korea or China or Saudi Arabia, wherever they're willing to buy it. We're willing to send it at that price. And so this is really one of the big changes that I think we're going to have to recognize in the dairy industry and come up with some tools. And we're having that debate on the policy level right now. So what's next? Obviously, we've got policy discussions. It looks like we've got a recovery coming, finally. We hope. That's the maybe. And so there's some opportunity here this winter. Obviously, we've got some nervous bankers. This has been a pretty tough downturn. It has really hit the equity hard. The thing that's been a bit fascinating is it's been fairly, at least from my perspective, fairly even. You heard the range in losses. In the West, the numbers that we continue to hear through late last spring and this summer was typically you can expect a dairy to be losing somewhere between $100 and $150 a cow. And it really, per month, it really didn't seem to matter whether you were milking 200 cows or 4,000 cows. Everybody seems to have adapted over the last 10 or 15 years that's in the industry so that they've got an ability to make money. Efficiency in size, organic, small, a large crop base, whatever their particular niche that has allowed them to stay in this industry now has made the industry fairly consistent in their cost structures. And so we don't see the gap that we saw in the 80s and the 90s where the little guys that didn't have the efficiencies of the large guys were the first to go out and help get the supply and demand back in balance. Everybody seems to be generally on about the same price structure for cost of production. And so it has allowed everybody to really look around and go, okay, I'm going to stay in, I'm going to bleed on equity here, and I'm going to outlast you because that strategy has worked well for the last dozen years. But what it has made is an interesting scenario where everybody's bleeding equity, waiting for this recovery to occur. And I can tell you the bankers are nervous, and I think there's going to be some changes on how things happen. Obviously, there's been a fair bit of national policy discussions. I'll get into that next, whether it's at National Milk or the House and the Senate have got competing bills. Those policy discussions, obviously, option number one is really just, tweak the existing programs that have been around, by and large, since the mid-30s. The support program, CCC purchasing, Dairy Export Incentive Program, or DEEP, was added in one of the farm bills dozen and a half years ago. Those programs have worked well. Didn't work too well for this downturn, but obviously that's still an option. There's a deregulation, I'll frame it deregulation, that's not exactly accurate, but it's certainly reducing the regulation and trying to allow the market. I think the theory behind this NMPF plan that was released in concept about a week ago is really to take a look at that dairy price support program, the MILC program. There's a concept, and I don't have any details on this second small bullet there, on a dairy producer income insurance program. I do not have the details on that, and I'm looking forward to hearing what that means. Is that a program like the milk income or the livestock gross margin program? I don't have a lot of details out of that. I do know, at least I think I was talking to a producer in Minnesota the other day, and they've had some discussions on this up at Foremost. So looking forward to hearing what that is. Obviously, the Cooperatives Working Together program has worked well. The question that I think all of us have is, can it continue to work for two reasons? One is the sex semen has created the ability to produce a lot more heifers in our industry than we need. And the second is, I think what we're seeing this last 7, 8, 9 months is the United States is balancing the rest of the world. The United States doesn't have a quota system like Canada or the EU. It's not a low-cost producer like Australia or New Zealand. We're in the middle, and it really feels like the United States needed to balance the world supply of milk, and we took a lot of that, and I will give Cooperative CWT program a huge amount of credit for doing that. But I think that was a huge challenge that they're still struggling. Have we gotten enough cows out of the system to balance both the U.S. and also the shrink in the international demand for our product and the world in general? I've got a link there for the press release to the NMPF plan. Third set of options kind of floating around what I would call the supply management options. There was a Specter Casey bill introduced last May, which was fairly similar to a bill in 07, Senate Bill 889. It has a fair bit of support from, I would say, the New England area, Pennsylvania. There's been two additional plans, at least, come to mind lately. USA Holstein, or Holstein USA, got on board with a group called Milk Producers Council, one of our trade associations out here in the West, out of California. The growth management plan that MPC had worked on for a number of years intrigued Holstein, and for a while they were working very strongly and together to promote this concept. There's been a slight there's a slight change in their proposals lately, but by and large, they're both basic concepts of how do we create an ability to control growth so that we don't end up with the you know, 1 foot on the gas and then 10 minutes later we've got 1 foot on the brake. How do we put some incentives in place to do that? A side note, as I'm an organic producer with Organic Valley, that co-op, which has a fairly unique ability to nationwide tell all of us that are owners in the company, slow down, we have too much product. Their board in May said we need to do a 7% reduction in production nationwide, and 6 weeks later it took effect. The United States dairy industry doesn't have that ability. Well, obviously it does have the ability. There's 69 co-ops in the United States through the Kapper-Volstead Act. They could get together and do exactly the same thing. About 85% of the milk in the United States goes through those co-ops. And certainly those co-ops through Kapper-Volstead could get together, but politically getting that many co-ops to agree would be very difficult. Organic Valley had, you know, a unique opportunity with a fairly significant portion of the national organic milk, and it was able to drop its production across the board, across the United States, by about 7% in 6 weeks. And so it was a nice model. It'd be nice to see if we can come up with something similar to that, because I think a supply management or a quota system like Canada, it never probably politically going to sell. Okay, let's move on. In politics, obviously, the odds favor no significant changes. Inertia is kind of tough to beat. The programs that we've had in place since the 30s have served us well, and big change really comes tough. It's one of those things the Founding Fathers wanted us to have, a slow, cautious, and deliberative democracy, and boy, have we created that. It at times becomes frustrating, but we have a lot of people to talk to, a lot of producers, a lot of families around the country that have been in the dairy industry, and they want to know what's next. And so really, how do we put together some tools to try and deal with these challenges that we've seen over the last 7, 8, 9 years of very high volatility, highs and lows that just are gut-wrenching at times like now. And so I'm going to punt a little bit on, I don't really think there's probably an opportunity, certainly not with the milk prices heading back up now. I think the political pressure to do something, right, wrong, or indifferent, the political pressure to do something on these policy proposals is probably going to fade as the milk prices come up. But those milk prices will go back down again. And so I think point number two is the one that's probably the take home. The risk management, I think, becomes much more important. If I had to look out next 6, 8, 10 months for the grain industry, you guys have learned how to manage using forward contracting and protect yourselves. The dairy industry has dabbled in it. I've had a lot of producers have used it, but I wouldn't say it's a majority by any stretch of the imagination. I would suspect that we're going to see bankers become more interested in helping their clients use risk management as a way to protect themselves. I think we're going to see an opportunity to lock in a decent margin. It may even be there today. We're going to put on a fairly couple hours of workshops at our annual meeting the end of this month to help producers understand, particularly the Livestock Gross Margin Program, and see if we can make sure that our producers understand tools and the choices that they can have, and really start to learn to use some of those livestock or risk management tools. Because really, again, the point number one, I'd like to hope that we could come to consensus in the United States as a dairy industry and create some new tools for dealing with this world market. But I just don't see consensus is tough in the dairy industry. We're pretty independent. But I think we're going to have to come up with something different.
Thank you, Jay.